Welcome. Today we are beginning a series of classes on the basics of Kabbalah. And in order for us to understand the basics of Kabbalah, we have to turn to the chart of Sefirot. If you saw any Kabbalistic diagrams, I'm sure you are familiar with this chart. There are 10 Sefirot, which are broken up into different categories, and a lot of things in Kabbalah are explained through them. We are going to be talking about them. The translation of the word Sefirot, which you find usually in English literature, is emanations. This is a sophisticated word that I suppose most of people don't use in their common speech. And probably vast majority of people who read these books on Kabbalah don't really know what this English word means. So saying Sefirot in Hebrew or emanations in English is pretty much the same. So what are Sefirot? We are going to find out during these classes. But before we will be speaking about Sefirot specifically, we need to make an introduction to find out where do they come from, how have they appeared. They say that there was a rabbi who got up to speak in front of his congregation, and he said, "Before my speech, I want to say a few words." So now you are going to be hearing the few words which I have to say before my speech. Today is our introductory class, where we are just going to familiarize ourselves with the source of Sefirot. And then, during the following classes, we are going to be speaking about them directly. So, this person comes to a psychiatrist seeking his professional help. The psychiatrist is telling him, "Could you please tell me your story?" The person is asking, "Where should I start from?" The psychiatrist is answering, "Well, start from the beginning." "Okay," says the patient. "In the beginning, I created the heavens and the earth." Usually, when we see people thinking that they are God, we think that they are nuts. But not so fast. They have basis in the Torah for this claim, because the Torah is telling us that we people were created in God's image. So we are just like God. What does it mean? Kabbalah bases a lot of its explanations on that idea. And you will find many different ways of interpreting this phrase. Today, I will want to direct your attention just to one of these ideas. First of all, somebody might ask a question. Well, if God is in charge of this entire world, and if God is running everything, and if God is really running my life, why am I feeling independent? Why don't I feel that He is controlling me? Well, God Himself is, as you can imagine, independent. He is not controlled by anyone, and when he created us in His image, and He gave this feeling of independence to us as well. So we are thinking that we are on our own and no one is in charge. But this was only a side point. The main idea that I want to focus during this class and the following classes as well is that it says in the book of Zohar that just like God fills this world, our souls fill our bodies. And we can understand why is there such a parallel. We don't really see our soul. We don't feel it with any physical senses. We can't really describe it, but we know it's there. Just like God, who we can't really feel directly. We can't describe him, but we just know that he is there. Also, we understand that just like soul is in charge of us and soul is running everything what we are doing, soul is giving us energy. So is God running this world. He's in charge of this world. He's giving this world its vitality. Also, our souls are at the same time inside our body, but they are not really inside of it in the sense that they are being a part of it. So is God. He is inside this world, but he is not inside this world in the sense that he is not a part of this world. And all the areas of Jewish mysticism are focusing on this comparison, because if we will understand how our soul is relating to our body, then we will understand how God is relating to this world. And this parallel is used by various parts of the Torah in different ways. Kabbalah is using this comparison and studies the godly spheres, spiritual worlds, and based on them is telling us how our soul is working within our body. Hasidut, the Hasidic teachings, are looking at how our soul is functioning inside our body and is telling us how God is relating to this world using this example. So in other words, if there is a comparison between us and godly spheres, then we can understand one of them by studying the other one. The question is, which one is closer to you? If you are a holy Kabbalist, then the spiritual worlds are your environment. You know them intimately, and based on them, you can understand how the physical world works. Simple people like us have to use this comparison in the other direction. For us, our physical reality is much closer, and therefore, in order to understand the spiritual worlds, we can get a glimpse of what they are by looking at our physical reality. So, Jewish mysticism, the mystical part of the Torah, is using this comparison between us and God, but this road which connects the two points is traveled in different direction by different parts of the Torah. Some of them travel from the physical world to the spiritual worlds, and some travel on this very highway just in the other direction. And now, when we understood this basic premise of Kabbalah, let's turn to God. What is God? How would you define God? Well, if you have to define God, then you are in trouble, because God is probably the only entity that does not have any definition. It cannot have any definition. We usually define everything by its limitations. If I am telling you that I am wearing a long sleeve shirt, well, that means that this shirt is not a short sleeve shirt. A long sleeve shirt is a part of a definition, but it limits my shirt in being long sleeve, not short sleeve. And the same thing goes for the collars. If I'm telling you that I'm wearing gray pants, that means that they are limited in being gray color. They are not pink and they are not green. I don't think I ever walk around in green or pink pants. I don't think I own such a pair of pants. Sorry. But we see how my clothing is defined by its limitations, and so is everything. If I'm telling you that this is a two-story house, then I'm describing it by its definitions. It's two-story, and it's not a one-story rancher, and it's not a skyscraper. How can we define God? God is not limited by anything. Therefore, in Kabbalah, God is referred to as Ein Sof, which means infinity. God is infinity. But here is one problem. Infinity, the way we know it, is also limited. It's limited in being infinite. When we talk about infinity in math, if you'll remember your grade school math, some of you are probably having already nightmares and breaking in sweat and are reliving their traumatic experience. Sorry for bringing up painful subjects. No pun intended. Okay. So, if you will think how infinity was defined in our math classes, we know that there is a line which is 5 inches long, and then there is a line which is infinite. Well, but the line which is infinite cannot be 5 inches long, and it cannot be 10 inches long, and it cannot be 1 million inches long. It's infinite. It is infinite and only infinite. It is limited in its infinity. God is not limited by anything, including his infinity. There's nothing that God is not. Therefore, if I will ask you, is God 5 inches long? The answer will be yes, he is 5 inches long. Is God also infinite? Yes, God is also infinite. Is God green? Yes, God is green. Is God blue? Yes, God is blue. There's nothing that God is not. Therefore, we understand that Ein Sof, infinity, the way it is defined by Kabbalah when we refer to God, is really a completely different infinity than the one we are used to and the one which is referred to in math or other areas of science. So therefore, I was trying to make a picture of God for you for today's class. I was working very, very hard. I hope you will appreciate my artistic talents. And right now, I'm going to show you a picture of God that I made. Taram! You see this? What do you mean it's a blank whiteboard? That's the picture of God. Well, if God is not limited by anything, then the only way to describe him is with this empty whiteboard. You see, if God is not limited by anything, then he is everywhere. You can see something only by its outline, only if you are contrasting it to something else. Air is not fully transparent. Air has a texture, but we don't see air. How come we don't see air? Because wherever we look, air is there. There's no place where there's no air. That's why we don't see air. If I am in a room where everything is the same color and there is no shades or shadows, there is equal light everywhere, I won't be able to see anything. So God is everywhere, and that's why he cannot be spotted by our eyes. He cannot be described. He cannot be seen. So, if God is everywhere, there's nothing outside of God. There's nothing anywhere besides for God. God is everything. God is everywhere. Then God has to be the only being. Because I cannot be in your chair. I cannot sit in your space because you are taking up that space. I can be right next to you, but I cannot be in your space. If God is everywhere, then nothing else can be in its space. Nobody can sit on God's chair because he's taking up his entire chair. Well, if God is everywhere, then I guess he cannot even have a chair because there's nothing besides for him. But then, if God is not limited by anything and he is everything, then he has to be a chair as well. Well, I think I just confused you and myself also. Okay, forget about it. But you get the point. So now we understand a problem that God has. Well, we just explained that God is everything and he is not limited by anything. We spoke about God's greatness and God's infinity. And now I'm going to be telling you about God's problems. Yes, God has problems. His first problem is that if he is not limited by anything in space or in time, then he has always existed and he will always exist. That means he was never born. That means that he does not have a birthday. So, don't you feel bad for God? Nobody can ever wish him happy birthday. He can never have a birthday party, and nobody will be ever bringing him presents for his birthday. That's terrible. I feel bad for God. Nobody will ever sing, happy birthday to God, happy birthday to God. Yeah, I feel sad. But then there's another problem that God has. It says that God wants to be kind. Kindness is possible only if there is somebody outside of you. You cannot be kind if you are Robinson Crusoe living alone on an entire island. There's nobody next to you. There's nobody near you. Well, I guess you could be kind to the animals that you are sharing this island with. But imagine if Robinson Crusoe would live there without any animals. There's nobody there. Who can he be kind to? There's nobody to be kind to. If God is the only existence, there's nobody that he can be kind to. If he wants to be kind, he's stuck. You cannot be kind to yourself. If I will be caressing my arm and saying, oh, I love my arm, you're so nice to me. Well, first of all, you'll probably send me to a psychiatrist. But besides for that, you will probably not say that I'm kind. You cannot be kind to yourself. Your arm is part of you. In order to be kind, you have to have somebody outside of yourself. So now we understand that God had to create someone outside of himself in order to be kind. Well, how can he create someone outside of himself if he is everywhere and there is no place outside of him? Well, so to do that, God had to get creative. What did God do? You see this whiteboard with the picture of God? So now we're gonna make a circle here. You see this? So now, inside this circle, there is a space where God decided he will be not. God withdrew himself from a specific space. God created an area without himself. He contracted himself. In Kabbalah, this circle is called Tzimtzum. In Hebrew, it's written Tzadik Yud Mem, Tzadik Vav Mem. Tzimtzum means contraction. God limited, confined himself. He said it will be an area which is void of him. Arizal, in his books of Kabbalah, is putting a lot of emphasis explaining that really this contraction is only created for our perception. It's not the place where God is not. It's only a place where God is not revealed. But for our purposes today, let's leave that issue aside. We will say that there is a place where God is not. For us, He is not there. So there is an empty space, a vacuum, where God is not. But one second. If God is not there, then how can He create something there? You cannot do something where you are not. You have to come there and do something. If you leave certain place, you are not there anymore to do anything. So God created a space where He is not. Okay, that's fine, but He now has to create us in this space where He is not. But He is not there to create us. Oh boy, He was trying to solve His problems and He got Himself even a bigger problem. He cannot do anything here because He is not here inside this circle. So therefore, Kabbalah is telling us that God created a ray of light that broke through this tzimtzum, this contraction. And this line, this ray of light, is called Kav. In Hebrew, it is Kuf Vav, two letters. Kav literally means a lion. So God is contracting Himself, withdrawing Himself from this space, and then He's sending a very measured, an extremely small part of His energy suited just to create us and run our lives. In order to understand this concept, we need to refer to, let's say, a great scientist, a professor, Albert Einstein, let's say, who is asked to speak in front of high school students and start teaching physics to them. You will think, wow, Albert Einstein, if he is able to teach physics to greatest minds of the world, I'm sure he'll be able to teach physics to these high schoolers. Well, not so fast. You know why? Because it's possible it's going to be harder for him to teach physics to high schoolers than to his university students. Because in order to start teaching physics from the beginning to people who never had any exposure to physics before, he has to, first of all, put aside, forget all of his thoughts of advanced physics. He has to forget for that time everything he knows. And then, after he removed all of this knowledge from his head, he has to start thinking, well, where can I begin with these teenagers? So first, he's completely withdrawing his knowledge from his head, and then he is making this small ray of light, this line that breaks through this wall of withdrawal, and this line is measured to fit exactly what these children need. Another example, which is perhaps more practical or maybe even more painful for many of us. Every teenager, and not only teenager, wants his parents to get off his back. Why? Because the parents are always there telling him what to do, when he has to come home, and how he's supposed to dress, and what he's supposed to eat, and how he's supposed to speak, how he's supposed to stand, and how he's supposed to talk to his friends. And the teenager is just saying, Mom, Dad, just let me be. I want to be myself. Why don't you leave me alone? So I'll tell you why. Because when this teenager was born, when he was a little child, his parents had to be there to tell him when to eat, when to sleep. They would dress him. They would do everything for him. They were overwhelming his existence. He did not have any opinion of his own. He did not have any decisions to make. He was completely nullified in front of his parents. He was taking no space. Then, as time goes on, he's learning how to make his own decisions, and parents have to create a space for him where they would not be. They have to let him make his own choices. And every parent knows, me including, that this is sometimes the hardest thing to do. The Torah is telling us, Eizehu Gibor, who is considered a strong person, HaKovesh et Yitzro, someone who knows how to limit himself, how to control himself, how to hold himself back. I love my kids, and therefore I want them to do the right thing. That's why I will be telling them what to do every single day, every moment of every single day. Why? Because I love them. How can I leave them alone? Well, this is the problem. On one hand, I want my child to make his own decisions. So to make his own decisions, I have to create a space where I would not be, where he would be on his own. But then on the other hand, I want my child to be making the right decisions. Well, if I want him to be making the right decisions, then I have to be there telling him what the right decisions are. Holy smokes! How can I be there telling him what the right decisions are if I'm not there, if I created the space where I would not be? So this is exactly what this diagram is showing. In order to be a good parent, we need to first learn how to create a space for our children without ourselves, where we would not be present, and then slowly send in our lessons, our information that we want to convey, our thoughts, our suggestions into this space. And how much space to give our children at each moment, at each stage of their life, is a very difficult decision. And once you figure out how much space we are supposed to give them, we now have to figure out how much of our suggestions we need to send in to this space, the kav, the ray of light. And this is another very difficult decision. You know why? Because if I created this space without myself, where my child can make his own decisions, and then I see he's making a wrong choice, do you know what I want to do? I want to destroy this tzimtzum. I want to break these barriers. I want to break this limitation of myself and just blow everything up. Forget about it. You're not making right choices. No more space for you. I'm taking you over. Well, every parent has this desire whenever they see their children doing something wrong. But Eizehu Gibor, who is a smart person, HaKovesh et Yetzro, someone who knows how to limit himself, how to withhold himself. And it's a very difficult decision. So now we understand this method of Tzimtzum and Kav. We understand why God had to create a space where he would not be on one hand, but then create a Kav, a line, a ray of light that would come into this space. Why is this line called a ray of light? The metaphor of light used in Kabbalah here for a reason. First of all, if there is a ray of light which is coming out of its source, we understand then the closer we are to the source of light, the stronger this light is, obviously. Then I want to ask you a question. Is there a light inside the source of light? Well, if there's a light outside of the source of light, for sure it has to be light inside the source of light. But can you see light inside of source of light? No, you cannot. You know why? Because it's everywhere. It's this white whiteboard where we don't see anything. Inside the source of light, it's this picture of God that you cannot see. Because, as you remember, we see things only by their outlines. And if I'm inside the source of light, everything light around me, and I cannot see anything. Also, light, a ray of light, is a side effect of the source of light. If there is a candle burning, you cannot just come and ask it, well, why are you giving light? Well, I'm just burning. Rays of light are its byproduct. So too, this ray of light, which is inside the circle of Tzimtzum, this Kav is a byproduct of God. Also, we understand that rays of light exist only as long as they are being emitted from the source of light. As soon as you put out the flame of the candle or you shut off the bulb, well, it takes for this light to travel. So as long as it's still traveling, it's going to be existing. But the new light is not going to be coming out anymore. So this creative force of Kav, of this ray of light, is fully dependent on God and exists only while God is still sending this light in. Also, a ray of light is giving us some idea about what the source is. It is a remote reflection, no pun intended, of the source of light. But it doesn't really describe it. If you're looking at the ray of light, you don't know what its source is. It could be a candle, could be a torch, could be a projector, could be an LED bulb, could be an incandescent bulb, could be a fluorescent bulb. You don't know. So is this Kav, this ray of light that is coming from God. It's not really describing it. It's just giving us some remote idea about what God is. This light by itself, whenever it's coming out of its source, it's never fitted to the recipient. We have a light on, and for some people it could be too bright. For others it could be too dim. Light is just coming out. Light itself doesn't care who sees it and who doesn't see it. But this light can be filtered. You see, I have this little video light here. And as you see, this video light is now, is now changing colors. You see, it's green, it's yellow, it's blue, it's red. How does it change colors? The bulbs which are inside here are regular LED bulbs, and LED bulbs emit only plain white light. this light is changing colors because different rows of these small LED lights have different filters. Some of them have a green filter and they make green light. Some of them have a red filter and they make red light. I know that because I once took a light like this apart. So I actually saw it. These are different filters. So the light itself is plain white light, has no color, but it could change color based on the filter that it's going through. So now we understand that this kav is a ray of divine light, but this divine light by itself is too powerful for us. Like we said before, when a light is in the room, when there is a light bulb on, you could walk into a room, you could say, oh boy, this light is too bright. It's too strong for my eyes. Well, this light doesn't care. It's just sitting there and sending out rays of light. That's it. This kav is too strong for us to be used as it is. But it has various filters. God created various filters that send this light to us through them in different ways. And by doing that, this light is becoming suitable for each one of us in a different way, and for each specific situation in a different way, and for each level, for each spiritual world in a different way. So in other words, the light by itself is too powerful, but various layers of filter allowed to be suitable for each specific situation dependent on what is needed. And these filters are called sefirot. They are the ones who are making this light usable for us, acceptable for us. They are the ones who are also making this light usable for all the higher worlds, the spiritual worlds which are above us, because these sefirot exist in spiritual worlds from the very, very top over here till the very, very bottom over here where we are. So now we know where these sefirot are coming from. It is important for us to understand that, because when you look at this chart of sefirot, each one of them represents a different power, different energy, different trait, different characteristic. It is easy for us to start thinking that there are many powers that run this world. No, they all come from the same source. And then this source is filtering its energy, its light through each one of them separately. So now this was the introduction and our following classes are going to be speaking about each one of these sefirot. We are going to be speaking about different categories, and we are going to be seeing how this is applicable to our lives. Please join us every Monday at 7:30 p.m. right here at Ariel. I hope to see you here. Thank you.